Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Cross Pollination with Matt Harrington, a 30-minute podcast focusing on young leadership and the skills needed for tomorrow's workforce. Cross Pollination works to connect ideas, concepts, and strategies from various thought leaders and share those insights with the world. Now, here's your host, Matt Harrington.
Good Friday afternoon, everybody. Welcome again to another episode of Cross Pollination. This is episode 20. Who thought we'd ever make it to episode 20? But we did make it to episode 20, so we're pretty excited about it over here. We're doing our show a little bit earlier this month. We're doing it on the 13th as opposed to the 15th, but still great content, still great material. So we just want to do it a little bit earlier to get it out of the way of the Thanksgiving holiday. Hope everybody does enjoy their Thanksgiving holiday and enjoys the show that we have. We have an awesome show, a best-selling author on the show today. If this is the first time you're tuning in to Cross Pollination, this is a podcast series powered by Blog Talk Radio that started from our book, Survival of the Hive, Seven Leadership Lessons from a Beehive. Cross Pollination is a platform to connect, pollinate, and inspire leadership and engagement with a special focus on young professionals. This is all powered by our Growing Millennial Leadership Program that New Directions sponsors. The Growing Millennial Leadership Program works with young aspiring professionals to build and grow leadership capabilities and competencies for the career and their organization. If you want to know more, check out growingmillennialleadership.com, and we'll kind of plug that in throughout the show. Today, we're going to talk about the talent gap and where millennials fit within that talent gap. And we have a specialist, an expert on what we talk about when we talk about a talent gap, especially when we talk about soft skill development. And he's going to talk a little bit about what that means and what that is. Today, our special guest is Bruce Tulgan. He's the best-selling author of It's Okay to Be the Boss, Not Everyone Gets a Trophy, and his most recent book, Bridging the Soft Skills Gap. And he's joining us for this special 20th episode. Bruce is internationally recognized as the leading expert on young people in the workplace and one of the leading experts on leadership and management. I actually got to see Bruce in action a couple months ago down in Brooklyn, and that's where he and I connected, and I thought he did such a great job, and we're going to dig into a little bit of what I think makes Bruce so special in this episode. Bruce has worked with tens of thousands of leaders and managers in hundreds of organizations, ranging from Aetna to Walmart, from the U.S. Army, I know he has some good stories about the U.S. Army, to YMCA. Bruce was named by management today as one of the few contemporary figures to stand out as a management guru. Bruce also lectures at the Yale Graduate School of Management and writes articles for many different associations, including Training Magazine and the Huffington Post. Before founding his company, Rainmaker Thinking, in 93, Bruce practiced law at the Wall Street firm of Carter, Ledgerd, and Milburn. Bruce, welcome to Cross Pollination. We're so excited to have you here.
Oh, it's a tremendous honor for me to be on, so thank you so much for including me.
Absolutely. Well, we had to. After having witnessed you, we saw that you published your new book, The Bridging the Soft Skills Gap, How to Teach the Missing Basics to Today's Young Talent. We picked that up, we read it, and we wanted to make sure that we got you on the episode. As this podcast is all about developing young people and young talent, your book just kind of really came right in alignment with what we're trying to do here. You know, I've given
a little
bit of a
laundry list of
things
that you've
accomplished.
Delighted to be part of your mission.
Awesome, awesome. Well, again, thank you for volunteering some of your time to kind of educate both myself. I think of myself as a continual learner, but also a lot of our audience as well. So thank you for being on the show. We've talked
a little bit about...
I'm
absolutely delighted. Thank you.
Great. We've talked a little bit about your background. Give us a little bit more kind of where you grew up from, kind of how you developed into this kind of guru of management, the soft skills stuff as well. But what got you so passionate about that stuff?
You know, I was a young lawyer working in New York City in the early 90s, and I was in my first real job. I had worked a lot from a young age, but coming in as a new young lawyer, there was an evident generation gap to me. Now, this was in the early 90s. Back then, the young people were Generation X, you know. And so I started interviewing people my age back then, 20-somethings, and I wrote my first book, was called Managing Generation X, and that book came out in 1995, and it just hit a nerve. And so it gave me the opportunity to continue interviewing young people. And so we've been interviewing young people in the workplace now since 1993. And, of course, I'm no longer young, but, there's, you know, we've been interviewing the new young workforce, and now that's the newest new young workforce.
That's
and,
great.
You know, we just keep going.
Absolutely. Well, and soon, and I know you and I have some discrepancies around millennials and Gen Y and then Gen Z, and everybody kind of has their own year end dates of those, but I know that you're also beginning to explore that Gen Z and even younger than the millennials, which are probably in their tweens and high school and grade school, they're going to be, you know, part of the workforce in the next 20 years as well. So I would imagine you're starting to hold some interviews with those people as well. Talk to me a little bit.
We're always interviewing young people, and as you say, you know, that's a really important point that, you know, demographers differ about the exact parameters of each generation, and the boundaries are always a little bit fuzzy. I mean, if you look at the baby boomers and Generation X, you know, if the last year of the baby boom is 1964, the first year of Generation X is 1965, well, you know, obviously the boundaries are a little fuzzy there, and the same is true with the millennials. You know, I think we've been tracking millennials in the workplace now for quite a while. The oldest millennials are 37. So we look at the millennials as first wave and second wave. And so we're looking at people born 1990 to 2000 right now. We call them second wave millennials. The term Generation Z gets thrown around a lot, and I think we're not sure how that is going to end up in terms of the exact parameters. But, you know, our goal is always just to be keeping our finger on the pulse of the newest new young workforce, what's going on with the youngest people. And, you know, so we look at if you're 16 to 25, you know, that's a second wave millennial, roughly, right? And that's what we're focused on right now.
What do you think, and I have my kind of beliefs and stuff, but what do you think makes up a generation? So, you know, yeah, there are some cuspers, as I've heard them been called, which is I don't really know what group I fit into, but when you start to define a generation for yourself or for your study, what makes it second wave or what makes it Gen Z? Is there a certain element that makes a generation?
Yeah, I mean, the way we look at it is, and of course there are different definitions, you know, some folks, they look at movement in birth rates. And so the baby boom, by definition, you know, during the years of the baby boom, the birth rate was over 4 million a year in the United States. And, you know, they look at some look at kind of data as their hard and fast rules. My view is what makes a generation is the accidents of history. You know, what was happening? Everyone, you know, goes through their teens. Everyone goes through their 20s. Everyone goes through these life stages. You go through school. You have your first job, your second job, your third job. You have a relationship. Maybe you form a family, and then you're in the middle stages of your life and career and so on. Everyone goes through these natural life stages. What makes a generation is what are the accidents of history that are occurring when you and your general age cohort were in their teens. You know, what were the accidents of history when you and the people your age were in their 20s? What were the accidents of history that were occurring as you were entering the labor market and starting your career? And so it's a shared historical experience which drives trends in attitude and behavior. So, of course, within each generation, there are as many stories as there are people. You know, if you're a 25-year-old woman from Seattle Hispanic descent, and what about a 24-year-old man who lives in Cleveland and is, you know, of African descent? And what about a 23-year-old person who, you know, lives in Philadelphia and was raised by a very traditional family, and a 22-year-old who lives in Florida who was raised by a very progressive or liberal family? You know, there are as many differences within each generation as there are people, but what makes a generational cohort is a shared historical experience, a shared perspective, and trends in attitude and behavior.
Great, yeah, and I couldn't have answered that any better. That's you know, that's where you and I are really good in alignment of kind of what were the things that went on in that generation or in that time period that influenced the outlook that group of people have on the world around them. And I'm sure that's where we see a lot of the discrepancies in work when we talk about multi-generational conflict or challenges or however we might spin it. Some of that is that I've experienced something much different in the elements, 9/11, recession, two wars, those types of things, as opposed to maybe a Gen X who experienced, you know, the AIDS outbreak, Sesame Street, whatever those things were that kind of influenced each generation. You know, we know that the Gen X was the most unsupervised generation, the latchkey kids, and then along comes the millennials who were over-supervised and continue to be with helicopter parents and that sort of thing. And so even within that, we can see where a Gen X manager would say, you don't need a whole lot of supervision, and a millennial going, I want a lot of supervision. So I can see where there's even some issues there. In your current book...
Yeah, I think that's exactly what our research shows. And again, you know, it's not 100%. Of course, there's differentiation among people of the same generation. But by and large, there are these trends. And you put it very well, that the Gen Xers are the great unsupervised generation. The millennials are the great oversupervised generation. Nobody's ever left them alone for a minute, you know? So.
Right. Well, and let's go there then. Let's redirect some of the conversation, because one of the biggest things, and I wrote about it in a blog this past week, and I keep seeing it, and I'm sure you do, and I'm sure you and I have some tomatoes thrown at us every now and then. The idea that we're talking so much about generations, why the heck are we talking about generations? You see it all over. A lot of it's attributed to this millennial generation, but we talk a lot about baby boomers now and their exit and retirement. You know, Gen X is up in arms, and millennials, these kids, you know, they don't know how it was back then. And there's been, I find, in the last couple years or year, a big push to say, let's stop talking about generation. What's your attitude towards that, especially as part of your profession is to talk about generations?
Yeah, I mean, our focus is to use the generational lens, not just as a diversity tool, although it's an important diversity lens, but we use the generational lens as a way to track and understand the changing workplace and the changing workforce. So it's just one way of looking at things. You can look at the workforce through a lot of different lenses. You can look at industry or skill specialization, geography. You can look at the workforce through the lens of gender differentiation, ethnic heritage. You can look at the workforce in lots of different ways. We find looking at this through the generational lens, it reveals an age bubble on one end of the spectrum. The workforce is aging. But on the young end of the spectrum, there's also a growing bubble, a youth bubble. And in the middle, there's a gap. So we call this the numbers problem, that the age bubble is growing on one end, the youth bubble is growing on the other end, and in the middle, there's a gap. And in the youth bubble, because it's an increasingly globalizing workforce, and there are parts of the world that are much younger than the West, where the number of young people, the percentage of young people is much higher. So if you look at the rising global youth tide, the workforce of the future looks very, very different. And it's not just that globalization and technology and increasing diversity and virtual reality and institutions in a state of constant flux because of the uncertainty and pace of change. And so individuals feeling like they need to figure out how to take care of themselves without the post-war job security myth. And so, you know, there are these macro forces that are occurring that are shaping the workforce of the future. And the biggest difference with the rising global youth tide is they've never known it any other way. Then, of course, if you zero in on some of the micro forces, growing up with helicopter parents on steroids, telling young people that all styles are equally valid, and, you know, being attached to a supercomputer 100% of the time that fits in your pocket, there's a reason why second-wave millennials seem like a new species. You know, their parents have been trying to give them superpowers. They have supercomputers in their pockets, they're coming of age during the most profound changes in the world since the Industrial Revolution. So, our way of looking at the workforce, we use this generational lens to understand. So young people are like the canaries in the coal mine. You know, what are the bleeding edge trends that we're seeing in the younger people? And one of the things we look at right now is what are the bleeding edge trends that you first see among young people? And then instead of growing up and settling down, right, instead of the young people growing up and settling down and becoming more like the grown-ups, what we look at is where are those trends where the grown-ups are starting to be more like the younger people, you know, like the handheld supercomputer in the pocket.
Absolutely.
Or texting or all of those things. So, you know, our approach to generations is not, hey, here's where, you know, baby boomers are coming from, so here's a cheat sheet for how to manage that person. Here's Gen Xers want to be left alone, so here's a cheat sheet for managing them. Our approach is more that we try to understand the trends and the changes by looking through this generational lens.
Absolutely, and I think, again, you and I are right on point. So I know you and I are on the same team. If you're just joining us, this is Bruce Tulgin. His newest book, The Bridging the Soft Skills Gap, How to Teach the Missing Basics to Today's Young Talent, is just hitting bookstores. Go out and pick out some of those books. It's a great read. If you want to learn more about Bruce, he's on rainmakerthinking.com. You can also follow him on Twitter, at Bruce Tulgin, or on LinkedIn as well, and he's on Facebook, Bruce Tulgin, as well. And I'm sure you can go to his website, and all the socials will be there as well, so that's an easy access point for you. Let's get into some of this soft skill talk here. First, I guess the first question, I just want to make sure we're all on the same page, especially for our audience. How do you define soft skills? What are soft skills? And then the second part of that question is, do you think the millennial Gen Z generation is missing some core fundamental soft skills, and what are those soft skills that we're missing? So again, what are soft skills, and then are we missing them, and what are they?
Yeah, well, soft skills, that's the term that usually applies to non-technical skills. So there's a broad range of non-technical skills that are broad, transferable skills. I call them the old-fashioned basics. Things like self-awareness and personal responsibility and basic work habits like timeliness, organization, diligence, focus. They're also people skills, interpersonal communication skills, and proactive learning, problem solving and decision making, a service mindset, teamwork. These are the soft skills as opposed to, you know, hard skills or technical skills. And the cliche is that people get hired because of their hard skills, but they get fired because of their soft skills.
Right.
But so that's one way to think about it. You know, there's such an emphasis on hard skills, especially in areas where there is a supply and demand imbalance among people with critical technical skills. But the soft skills are very, very important. And our research has shown a steady diminution in the soft skills of new young workers based on what their hiring managers have to say. So based on what hiring managers have been saying over the last 22 years since we've been tracking this, the instance of managers complaining about the soft skills of their new young workforce, that's been a steadily rising issue. And so it's, you know, the soft skills gap is the gap between the expectations of employers and the, you know, how young people are showing up in the workplace.
Yep. So I would imagine, when you are interviewing both the managers and probably a lot of the millennials and Gen Z, do you find certain core soft skills are missing compared to others? Or and I think my only addition to soft skills is it's really interpersonal skills. You know, it's kind of, you know, you and I both come from the same world of pushing on soft skills as being extremely important, probably even more. Anybody can learn a technical skill, especially if they have talent around it. It's really tough to learn some soft skills. We actually call them the hard soft skills. Do you think there are one or two that you just find prevalent among the millennials?
Well, the list I just gave you, those are based on our research, the 12 critical soft skills that where there's been a radically growing gap between the expectations of managers and how young people are showing up in the workplace. So I sometimes use three larger buckets: professionalism, critical thinking, and followership. But within professionalism, I count self-awareness, personal responsibility, attitude, work habits, and people skills. And then within critical thinking, there are three critical skills, which are proactive learning, problem solving, and decision making. And then followership is the term we use to describe respect for context, and citizenship and service and teamwork. And so that's our soft skills model, and it's based on priorities of hiring managers, the things that really matter to managers and that they say are lacking in their new young workers. And so that's what our model is based on. And what we've tried to do is drill down on each of those and figure out what is it that that's missing and how can we help leaders and managers build those soft skills in their new young workforce. I always use the military as an example because the military relies tremendously on young talent. And so, you know, their whole approach is step one, we tear you apart and rebuild you, you know?
Right.
And it's not an accident. And that's been true always. And so, yes, of course, young people, there's always a gap between how young people show up and how grown-ups wish they would show up. You know, it's the long-range term of art we use for that phenomenon is kids today. You know, what's the matter with kids today? Well, you know, grown-ups have been saying that forever. But again, what's different now? And one thing that's different is we live in this era of nonconformism, and the second wave millennials are the ultimate nonconformists in an era of nonconformism. And, of course, with globalization and the growing diversity and the information tidal wave where you can see hundreds or infinite number of answers for any question, you can see how people stop thinking that, well, one size fits all, you know, is a good idea because they have access to an infinite array of information about any issue. You can see in a globalizing and increasingly diverse world that, hey, there's lots of different ways to look at everything and lots of different ways to think about and do everything. And so in some ways, what the soft skills gap is really a matter of nonconformism. And remember that young people who are coming into the workplace today, you know, they've been raised in this all styles are equally valid kind of discourse. And, you know, they look at those issues as matters of personal style and preference, and they're reluctant to conform. And I think that's a big part of what's going on with the soft skills gap.
Well, and I like when you bring up, and I've heard you mention it before, and I've even started to use it, of the idea also, and just to counterbalance that, is the military is the number one recruiter and employer of millennials. So the idea that these millennials are running around kind of crazy and we don't know how to control them and they're just taking over the world kind of thing, and yet the U.S. military, one of the most strictest employers ever to be organized, actually hires the most amount of millennials. And so there is adaptability within the millennial to do that. And we know, just even from our studies and yours as well, that there is also this, they're kind of a schizophrenic generation. They are one way, and then at the same time, they love structure. They love knowing what's ahead of them. If you think about back in grade school where here's what you're going to be doing today was how the teacher put that on the board, and every student knew what was going to go on in the day. And I think that's probably a lot of that where we run into some of the supervision issue. But I always love your story around the military, because I think where we go, well, we can't all be Google. You know, we can't all just offer nap rooms and bouncy balls. And you go, well, I don't think you need to, because look at the U.S. military. They're the number one recruiter and employer of millennials, and they're pretty strict. So I think you can put that kind of boundary and authority in your organization as well. We've got about 3 minutes left, Bruce. I want to make sure that we plug how to get a hold of you. It's a great book, Bridging the Soft Skills Gap, How to Teach the Missing Basics to Today's Young Talent, published by Wiley. And we have Bruce Tulgan on the air with us right now. Go over to his website. You have to. There's a lot of good information and good ways to connect with Bruce. RainmakerThinking.com. You can also follow him on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn. To wrap up today, and then something that we always do with all our guests here, Bruce, what's been one of the newest technologies or apps that you've downloaded or purchased in the past 3 months that you want to give a shout-out to?
You know, I can't do that kind of promotion, but I will tell you, I knew you were going to ask me that question, and you said, what's a new technology that you really want to promote? And I hope you'll forgive me if I promote two old-fashioned technologies.
Go for it.
And one is taking a walk every day, and the other is doing more push-ups. And I don't know if, you know, I think you know that my metaphor...
I was going to say, your background is in martial arts.
That's a right. Big part of my life is I just came back from Okinawa and was tested for master. So after all these years, I've studied karate for 41 years. But I use fitness as a metaphor, and I do think people should take a walk and do push-ups. But I use it as a metaphor because, you know, there's no shortcut to getting in shape as a leader. There's no shortcut to getting in shape when it comes to interpersonal communication and any of these soft skills, whether you're leading or following, there's no shortcut. You got to take a walk every day. You got to do push-ups every day, or you don't get strong. So there's no quick fix. It's follow the basics. Respect context. Understand where people are coming from and where they're going, and try to add value and communicate in a clear, effective way, and figure out where it does make sense to conform and follow the rules and do things their way, and then figure out where you want to be yourself, where you want to stand out, where you want to be different, where you don't want to conform, where you want to create your own brand and your own identity. And so I always say to people, you know, the basics go a long way. There's no shortcuts, and the best way to get there is one step at a time.
I love it, and you know, I appreciate the campaign that you're on, which is putting in some of the basics back into management, soft skill development. Bruce Tulgan, thank you so much for joining us for Cross Pollination today, and thank you to our
Thanks
audience.
Thanks for having me.
Tuning in. Thank you, Bruce.
Hey, thank you so much. Thank you.